Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
A warning about this episode. It contains sexually violent, offensive, extremely graphic language, yet vital to include when exploring the facts of both Shauna's and Dana's cases.
Grass is not cut. No one's around. But give it a shot. See what he has to say.
Jack Linney is still a strong person of interest for the murders of both Dana Stidham and Shauna Garber. I determined the best way to approach him was a cold call, a surprise knock on his door. Try to catch the guy by surprise, off his game. See if I can tell who he is before he can put up a front to disguise himself. Today, Linney lives in a suburban neighborhood, each cookie-cutter house like the one before it. The town where he lives, which I am choosing not to name, is between Bella Vista, Arkansas, and Anderson, Missouri. During the time of Dana's murder, he was living in Bentonville, Arkansas, just a few miles from Dana's home, workplace, and where Dana's body was found. He then moved to a different county, just 35 miles from Pineville, where Shauna's body was found. The houses around Linney's were well-kept, yards well-maintained. That is, all of them except for Linney's. In fact, it appeared as though he'd abandoned yard work and any type of upkeep long ago.
Shades are drawn. Inhaler on the ground.
I stood for a while on his front steps and waited. He was either not home or not answering. The windows, quite strangely, were covered from the inside with newspaper. Every single one of them.
No one seems to be home.
With multiple daily newspapers left on the doorstep, wet and moldy, I got a sense that no one had been home in quite some time. I checked the garbage bin and it hadn't been used for a while. Other than helping me paint a mental picture of this guy, I struck out this time. My surprise visit didn't yield the results I'd hoped for, but I could now begin calling Linney to see what he had to say and find out if he'd even talk to me. I sensed he was the type of guy who needed to explain himself. So I was hopeful. This, as the deeper I looked at Lenny, the more evidence I found pointing to his alleged involvement in two 30-plus-year-old cold murder cases. Previously on Paper Ghosts.
He said, "We're going to start playing chess by mail." And he said, "Don't cheat." I thought, "Well, what? How dare you, a serial killer, moralize to me?"
There was probably like 17 different types of twine that were used to cocoon this young lady after she had been murdered.
It's extremely difficult, but it's not impossible. None of them are impossible. If it was impossible, we'd probably stop trying, but this can be solved, and it will be.
My name is M. William Phelps. I'm an investigative journalist and author of more than 40 true crime books. This is season 4 of Paper Ghosts, The Ozarks. Law enforcement studies on cold case work have shown that the passage of time can pose a serious threat to recall accuracy. In other words, a witness's memory might produce inaccuracies because of the time between the crime and the account provided to law enforcement. This is why documentation, recorded interviews, and information gathered near the time of the crime in real time become so utterly vital to cold case investigation. At the end of the last episode, you heard a prosecutor talk about evidence found in Jack Linney's house during a search warrant over a year after Dana's murder, spools of various ropes, cable, and wire. That search also uncovered some rather alarming forensic evidence, which we're about to unpack in this episode. Before that, however, I'd like to go back and look at two specific, significant events leading up to the execution of those warrants. First, there was a disturbing phone call, unlike any of the past calls you've heard that the BCSO thought might possibly be connected to Dana Stidham's case. This call, which is violent in content, made just after Dana went missing, felt very significant and perhaps even an indication of things to come.
Hello, this is...
I understand you're having an auction to raise money.
Yes, I am.
What's the money for?
Well, we're trying to raise money for the Stidham family. We hope to be able to raise enough money to help the family out and start a reward fund that might help us find who killed Dana Stidham.
Are you afraid to get involved in something like this?
No, not really.
You should be.
Why is that?
How would you like me to cut your tits off?
Terrified, the woman immediately hung up the phone. A second call came in sometime later.
Hello?
The caller alluded once again to the reward money, but he was hard to understand. The woman was certain, however, she was speaking to the same person.
Who is this?
Listen, bitch, I'm gonna stick my knife in your...
Hey, you know where I'm at.
She hung up the phone. A third call came in soon after.
Know what I'm gonna do to you? You have to be really hard. I'm gonna you so hard you'll think my is gonna come out your throat. I can hardly wait to chew on your... Are you listening, bitch? Did you hear me? Damn you, bitch, you better listen. I'll you with my goddamn knife. You, they'll never find you.
This time, he hung up the phone. You might be wondering why these calls happened to be recorded. And that's because the calls had been made to the tip line set up for Dana's investigation. The woman called the BCSO immediately after the third call. The BCSO interviewed her right away. Journalist Brandon Howard spoke with me about those disturbing calls you just heard.
I understand it was a family friend and worked at the post office, which was really a catty corner to the grocery store where Dana worked. You could access it from the same parking lot.
The frightening part of Brandon's comment is that it's entirely possible The caller was watching the woman from a payphone overlooking the post office in the parking lot of Phillips Grocery. These calls were different from the previous ones explored throughout the investigation, not only in context, but in how threatening and serious they seemed. Violence was part of the caller's objective, as was trying to instill fear and intimidate certain individuals connected to Dana's case.
Yeah, I think the phone call is significant because it doesn't seem like a typical phone call that's a prank, which I'm sure there were probably phone calls that were pranks involved in Dana's case. I think that's probably typical of any case like this. But this is repeated phone calls that I would argue grow more disturbing, and they are pretty specific in the types of threats the caller delivers.
I asked Brandon for his insights about the caller.
First thought was that it escalated from 0 to 100, like really quickly, seemingly in just a handful of phone calls. Two, if you're comparing this to another suspect in the case, possibly a high school classmate of Dana's, it doesn't seem like something a high schooler would do. And to have an addendum to that, if there is the possibility that he made a phone call to another woman later in life, it doesn't seem to fit somewhat of a jovial, if not disturbing, sexual conversation he had with another woman. Nothing like this where there were threats of bodily harm and escalation to violence. And the third part about it is the phone call was paired with a voice lineup, and the woman at the post office selected a voice of a suspect who later emerged in Dana's case that I think is probably the best suspect of the group.
During the woman's interview with BCSO detectives, they played a voice lineup. Six different voices of six different men. Within those six men was Jack Linney's voice from that first interview the BCSO had conducted with him. She immediately picked Linney's voice out of the lineup. This call also points us away from the BCSO's early target, Mike McMillan, because whoever called into this tip line would have had access to local information in order to know certain details.
And so the other part of it is, and you made this point, which I think is very, very valid. It's hard to believe that it could be Mike McMillan because would he have access to the daily record, right? Or even get that information from family and make the call?
Exactly. Yeah. The more I thought about that, to place the context of the 1989 phone calls, he would have to have access to the daily newspaper in the area. There was no internet, social media, things that we take for granted now.
Mike McMillan was not even in the state when the calls were made into the tip line, which completely excludes him as a potential source. And here's the thing about Jack Linney's voice I need to underscore.
She selected voice, which I hate to say feather in the cap, but stood out to me at least because had a very unique speaking style, the result of a bad accident that left him with some brain damage. So he had a slur, lisp type of voice. And I thought that really stood out because it would seem like something somebody would remember from a phone call. And then if they heard back again, they'd be more likely to choose it.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
The focus on Jack Linney as a person of interest in Dana Stidham's murder and conceivably Shauna Garber's went from intense to laser focused in 1993 after he was picked out of that voice lineup. Another fact leading to the search warrants on Linney's home and vehicle was a second interview, which was more of an interrogation. If you recall, the first Jack Linney interview was rather light-handed and conducted during the information-gathering phase of the investigation. This second interview was more strategically designed to get him to maybe admit to his possible role in Dana's murder and start heading in the direction of positioning him as potentially being involved in Shauna Garber's. Unfortunately, I could not locate a recording of this second interview, but was able to find a copy of a complete transcript. Additionally, while I was in Bentonville, Arkansas, I met with someone you heard at the end of the previous episode, the former prosecutor who was part of the team interviewing Linney that second time. If I couldn't hear the interview myself, the next best thing was to talk to someone who was in the room. And so you are?
Drew Miller. Right now, just an attorney in private practice. So you're coming to me because I was the deputy prosecuting attorney and the chief deputy prosecuting attorney in the Benton County Prosecutor's Office September of 91 until January of 95.
Drew has this southern charm about him that is hard not to like. He works out of a sprawling office located inside a Gothic-style building reminiscent of a 15th century church. Drew oversaw the prosecutor's office in Benton County and was present for the search warrants and second longer interview the BCSO conducted with Jack Linney in 1993. One thing he cleared up for me was how the BCSO had latched onto Linney. Back in the first episode, I talked about a man seen talking to Dana in the parking lot of the Phillips. One report had the two of them apparently arguing. The guy who was with Dana matched Linney's description and, more importantly, when confronted about whether he was in the parking lot on that July 25th afternoon, the last time Dana was seen, Linney said, quote, "She might have even talked to me."
So I think my recollection, he was identified early on, and then he surfaced again, maybe just to do due diligence and making sure that they were going back to re-interview everybody. But it seemed to me that when we talked to this individual, that there was some independent evidence that they had found. I think they had found maybe some maps or something that had come up that were maybe in his vehicle or that he had given them or given somebody that had some locations of not only where close proximity where Dana had disappeared, but some close proximity where other individual unsolved murders had appeared. Generally the same type of criteria, female, age anywhere from 20 to 35. And they had some confidence even before he was interviewed, but they felt like that he was a strong lead.
In an earlier episode, I mentioned those maps, which were found in Lenny's vehicle and had the locations in town clearly marked where Dana had visited or had been seen on the day she disappeared. Why in the hell would Jack Lenny have maps marked with that sort of information? Here's journalist Brandon Howard.
He reportedly had several maps of Bella Vista in his vehicle that he initially said belonged to the newspaper, but detectives were concerned because he had markings on the maps that included the spot where Dana's car was found and the grocery store where she worked at. He tries to pass that off as that's the location where newspapers might be built, but they have questions about that, since why would a newspaper tube be built on the side of the highway or at a grocery store? He has no solid answer to that response. He also has a bizarre outburst that he has no idea about the Stidham homicide, seemingly in an unrelated question that bears little to any relevation about her case.
He just, you know, red flags all over the place with this guy.
Yes, I don't mean to laugh. Yeah, red flags. It's shocking. I mean, if I was to check the box of predator or deviant, this guy checks several of those boxes.
I mean, showing up at a store with a ski mask on.
Telling the women you're horny as hell. It's very bizarre. Waiting for them in the parking lot. Mentioning he gave detailed answers about Dana's case. Referred to her as a really good-looking person that saddened him that people like that are killed. Never the ugly ones. In addition to that, he mentions unprompted that Dana might have had a low tire, which could have prompted him to pull her over. But that wasn't mentioned by detectives in the interview. It was public knowledge, but not mentioned by detectives in the interview.
The plan during this second interview with Lenny was to get him, under oath, to explain the circumstances, pointing the BCSO in his direction. You heard the first interview, which was very much an avenue for the BCSO to let Lenny know they were coming after him. During that second interview, prosecutor Drew Miller explained, Lenny rang several alarm bells without ever being prompted. Starting with agreeing to the interview in the first place.
They were wanting to pin him down. Very surprised that he wanted to come in. You know, my initial reaction is, you know, this guy's coming in. Surely he's not the guy, right? I mean, who does that? But the interview was, everything can be considered unusual. But from my perspective, it was almost like he definitely wasn't afraid.
The interview was conducted mostly by Danny Varner. Lenny, 46 years old at the time, was cocky and smarmy, answering questions in a sarcastic manner, as if he was taunting law enforcement.
I got the feeling during some course of that interview, if Danny had the legal ability to wrap his hands around his neck, he would have wrapped his hands around his neck. But he maintained. It was just an interesting interview because as I'm listening to him, it's just not like, I'm sure he denied it, but it just really wasn't like he denied it. You know, it's just like he just wanted to continue the conversation.
What law enforcement found unquestionably disturbing, not to mention revealing, was that Lenny himself brought the subject of Dana Stidham.
It just, as I sat there in the interview, my feelings changed to, I know something is going on with this guy. I don't know what it is. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a psychologist. I'm just trying to get a read. But there was just something that was clinically off.
At one point, while referring to Dana, Lenny says, quote, she was real good looking. And that's one of the big things that always ticked me off. They always kill the good looking ones. They don't ever kill the old, fat, ugly hog, end quote. It's a shaming, demeaning, and humiliating way to view women, especially when you're being questioned about the murder of the young woman you are talking about.
Yeah, again, that would be a typical example, like in some aspects, really incriminating, right? If he says it the right way or the wrong way. But as you're going, he says a lot of that stuff and you're just going, why would he even go right there?
At one point, they pressed him about prior arrests and he mentioned a concealed weapon charge and also being accused of stealing a police officer's gun. In an earlier episode, we discussed a report from a witness claiming to have seen Dana's car being followed by a station wagon. At the time, Lenny owned a station wagon fitting the description, which had been searched the week before the second interview. Inside, they found blood on the front passenger seat floorboard carpets and on the back seat, along with several female hairs.
So two and two make four.
Again, at the time, I thought that there was enough evidence to piece things together.
Next, Drew makes an astute point about motive, placing Lenny into a very distinct, rare category of murderers, which begins to point at him as a serious person of interest in Shauna Garber's murder as well, or at the least, someone who needs to be excluded.
Well, that's the problem with a serial killer, because number one is motive. And with a serial killer, you don't really have motive. And this, at least based on the perception at the time, and probably the perception now, is it was a serial killer. Could have been somebody that she'd known, but somebody that had done this before, or there potentially was no way to string them together individually as far as motive. So then the next thing you need to prove is opportunity, and that's a tricky one, because obviously the opportunity potentially existed, but the longer a case goes on, you know, it's very difficult to prove that opportunity.
The BCSO had already proved Lenny had the opportunity, was in the area at the time, and had no alibi for that night. Furthermore, they spoke to his then wife, who said he would leave home for days at a time, and she had no idea where he was or where he had gone.
And then you get to the intent issue, and the intent with regard to a serial killer is just that. So it's almost like with a serial killer, you kind of got to build the bodies. You know, I mean, that's the worst part of it. You got to connect, as opposed to connecting the dots, you got to connect the bodies. And so it's difficult. I mean, because the number one thing that is good in any kind of murder case is the motive, and you really don't have it.
Right.
At least you can't connect it.
Right.
So that's what makes these kind of difficult.
A serial killer acts with impunity. Their number one motive for killing is for the fun of it. Drew Miller's point is incredibly valid. To catch a serial killer, it's imperative to find a connection among his victims, which often leads to evidence and, simultaneously, additional victims.
And so over the course of time, how did it progress with him?
I don't know how long. I mean, I definitely know Sidoriak, he had a passion for it, and Varner had a passion for it. And it's just like anything else, just like any occupation, you know, the people that have passion for it continue the fire. When they're not there to fan it, it's going to die. And so that's why people that do cold cases, it's really hard for them, because they have to build that desire.
Yep.
You know, and they have to build it from scratch. And some are really good at it. You know, some of them, you know, open the box and they're all there. Some it takes a while. And I mean, but if you're like, what are you going to do? Hand a young detective a 30-year-old case and say, go investigate this? He's like, oh my, what am I going to be doing for the rest of my life? You know, so it's just a different situation for sure.
Such an important comment, and one I think victims' families need to hear. Investigators involved in a particular case for 10, 20, even 30 years ultimately retire. The new team comes in and they lock onto another case, contemporary or otherwise. Cold cases get put on a back burner. Not for any nefarious or personal reasons, it's just how the system is designed. The squeaky wheels get the oil. Which is why it's so vital for victims' families to keep whispering in the ears of law enforcement about their cases without making accusations or becoming too bothersome or an annoyance. I do understand how difficult a task this can become, how utterly painful, how gut-wrenching and frustrating when there are no answers and law enforcement is seemingly not responding. But oftentimes, it's a matter of logistics, budgets, and new cases taking precedence, even when everyone is doing their best.
With regard to this suspect, I'm confident that he was watched in some sort of fashion. He was somewhat kept track of.
During his second interview, as investigators really began to drill down into him, Lenny clearly enjoyed playing cat and mouse. A pattern of his, I would soon learn, firsthand myself. In one instance, Detective Danny Varner asks him if he drove a station wagon and a pickup truck. Linney responds, rather smartly, only one at a time. Then they ask which roads he favored driving and if he ever drove on River Road in Pineville, Missouri, which would have been a convenient cut-through heading toward where he lived in Missouri then. This route would have taken him directly by the area where Shauna Garber's body was dumped. He plays dumb, saying, "Maybe. Not sure. Sometimes, I think so." Then they ask him about a Texas license plate he had and if he ever used it. His bizarre response to that? "I don't know anything about the Stidham homicide, or anything else." Makes you wonder how he made that leap. From being asked about a license plate to responding with defensiveness about a murder investigation, naming the actual victim. My guess is that if he had used that license plate on the night of Dana's abduction and murder, that he could be trying to get in front of the evidence, thinking maybe somebody had reported seeing a Texas license plate.
Would you call him smart?
I would not call myself smart. I don't call him smart because I think this person did it and he was just allowed, he just was there giving an interview. It's like, I couldn't figure him out. I just couldn't figure him out. I would say probably is one of those people that, you know, this might be a characteristic. Somebody might say if you ask in the parameters for this characteristic that he's smart. I think given a nuclear war, is one of those guys that are going to survive, you know, and that's smart in and of itself. So smart in an intelligent way where he can add numbers or write a poem, no. But if it came to survival, maybe smarter than most of us.
That makes sense. And it also sounds like you're going down the psychology of a serial killer.
Yeah. I was convinced.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Known as the adversarial model in law enforcement, AM is an interrogation technique specifically used to obtain a confession. Investigators apply high-pressure tactics and close-ended and suggestive questions, which are purposely hurled at a suspect in order to elicit a reaction. We've all seen this model on procedural cop dramas and true crime shows. This was how BCSO detectives Danny Varner and Mike Sidoriak, with then-prosecutor Drew Miller sitting in, went at Jack Linney during that second interview, hitting him hard with everything they had. The blood-soaked station wagon, his truck with the camper, the fact that a man fitting Linney's description, down to a ball cap he admitted wearing that day, was reported speaking to Dana, perhaps even fighting with her in the parking lot of the Phillips. Further into the interview, Linney says, in response to allegations of sexual harassment against him, quote, "Well, if some people want to take it wrong, they can complain if they want to." From there, he admitted that he routinely pulled over women on the road near the Phillips, had a habit of picking up hitchhikers, knew details about Dana's case not released publicly. Later, when asked pointedly, quote, "Maybe you picked up old Dana and just things went downhill for her," Linney answered, "Maybe." When asked for a hair sample, being the cocky smartass he is, Linney responded, "Next time I go to the barber, I'll save you some." I guess that was a no. After being asked why he was driving around with duct tape in his car, Linney says, "I don't use it." And finally, after being asked, within the context of Dana's murder, mind you, if he ever sometimes thought about killing people, Jack Linney replied, "Yes."
It was an interesting interview. There was a scurry of activity, as I recall, right after that interview with regard to a young lady that had been found on a porch and wrapped in cords. I participated in a search warrant up there, and that was of his parents' house.
That search of Linney's mother's house yielded several interesting findings, including two white ropes, some blue and white rope, which matched with the same rope used to bind Shauna Garber, green and black army paracord, and two knives. And then there was the interview with Linney's ex-wife, whose name I am choosing not to use. From that interview, it's clear the BCSO was in full pursuit of Linney, heading down the road of an arrest warrant. Remember, law enforcement recovered the contents of Dana's purse, but not the bag itself. Linney was said to have collected purses, as strange as that sounds, and one source claimed he kept his vast collection of purses at his mother's house. As they get into a conversation about Dana's purse with his ex-wife, an interesting exchange takes place. First, they describe what Dana's purse looked like before casually, as you can hear in this exclusive recording, sliding a photo of a similar purse across the table.
This one had Jordache on the front of it.
I've seen that.
Have you?
Mm-hmm.
She ever given you a purse like that?
Purse like that. I've got a denim one.
It's kind of a pouch denim purse, or?
Well, actually, it's Wrangler jeans.
Okay. What about any jewelry, as Danny was talking about? Do you remember if he gave you any jewelry during that time? Or he found
he
any jewelry?
No, he gives me jewelry. It's silver. Okay. I like silver jewelry. But no.
Did he ever find anything at that time?
No, jewelry he'll usually give to me because I like jewelry. I got a bunch of it. I don't wear it all, wear it, but I like it. I collect it.
Then they touch on the seemingly endless number of sexual harassment claims lodged against her ex-husband, and how most of the women working at Phillips were so scared of the guy, they had their husbands wait for them in the parking lot after work, because Linney was out there just about every single day stalking and even following them home. Listen to how Detective Danny Varner explains it.
To go on, I said about probably 5 weeks ago, we started receiving other complaints from a checker up there in the Phillips store. And it got to the point that she had to be locked in her car that she was on the move for out there in the parking lot. And she was just scared to death. So, then 2 weeks ago, this Friday, followed another girl that works at Phillips's from Bentonville down by the way Hill on the road, like that, just over Friends Hickory and Hill right down there coming back into Bella Vista. And between there and Bella Vista, he pulled up beside her and was hollering at her and motioning for her to pull over, doing a stunt like this to pull over. This girl had her air conditioner on, her windows up, and stereo on. She says, I didn't know him, and she has a lot of trouble with her ex-husband, and she just don't stop for anybody. She said, I just flipped him off and sped his feet up, and he said he's still staying right on my bumper. All the way to Phillips's, where I was coming back to work, and he pulled into the Phillips parking lot. And when she was inside, telling the other girls what had happened and describing the pickup and the male subject in the pickup.
So, even after he was interviewed about harassing women and Dana's murder, Lenny was still frequenting the Phillips parking lot, still harassing women, still following them, still trying to pull them over. Then this.
What we think is that Dana knew him, which we've got people saying that he talked to her. You know, in times he knew everybody in the deli, because he came in there numerous times a day. Dana was the type, if he'd ever followed Dana and pulled up beside her and told her to pull off, she would pull off. She and, and we don't know if it was that talked to her right outside the store, but it's possibly that he told her something that, can you follow me up there and take me somewhere where I can leave my car or something. And Dana would have been the type of person to do it. And maybe things just got a little out of hand and, from there.
They asked about a possible penchant Lenny had for picking up hitchhikers.
Is that a normal practice of his? Does he pick people up like that? Mm-hmm. Okay. How often does he do it?
Whenever someone is on the road, whenever someone is broken down, someone just parks, he'll stop and see if he can help them. I got no problem if he picks up. I got no problem if he picks up somebody who I know.
Uh-huh.
I got a problem if he picks up somebody that I know. You know, I said, you don't know anymore. And I don't care if it's just me and him. I said, that's fine, but our kids are with us. I don't want him stopping for anybody. But he'll do that.
Have you noticed any, does your husband have any personality conflicts within himself? I know he had that accident. Has that affected it? Any? You haven't seen any vast change of personality that has happened since you met him? Did he switch his personalities or anything like that?
He ever been violent toward you? Never has.
No, he's stayed.
Pretty even keel?
Yeah.
One of the things that we noticed about him when we searched his vehicle, saying he was going through a wallet type thing with the papers, and dropped them and laughed. You know, I said, I knew you was going to do that. And then we was gathering up some of the duct tape. We got about like seven maps. And I put Bella Vista old maps to the new ones and two Arkansas state maps. Got mad. He said, you started pissing me off. And we thought it was from, one even keeled person and joking with us and everything and being cooperative too. Getting upset and possibly violent.
Not only violent, but you will piss him off.
That last comment bears repeating. Violent only if you pissed him off. Spoken like someone who, I'd imagine, may have experienced that violence firsthand. And then, this.
Does he hold it in or does he let it out?
Let me ask you kind of another personal question. Jenny, sexual fantasies? Kinky sex?
No.
Nothing like that.
I know Danny's asking, has he ever implicated or let you know he wanted to use some type of restraint on you or on him?
Mm-hmm.
Like rope or being tied up?
No. I told Peter that he can go somewhere else.
Has he ever implied that he wanted to do that?
No. He just says those kind of people are good for you.
They asked her about Dana's murder specifically.
Is there anyone you know well enough that you feel is above suspicion would not do something like this?
Fred Wooden.
You don't think he would?
No.
Why?
I don't know how to explain.
I had to stop and think about that a moment while studying this interview tape. Here was a wife who believed her husband was capable of committing murder.
Let me go back this way. We've thrown a lot of stuff at you here today. And quite honestly, you're taking it pretty good. I mean, you're taking everything in stride. You're realizing what we're doing here. And some of those things you talked about, have they raised any concerns with you? Or have they shocked you or surprised you? Or
I don't let anything shock or surprise me anymore. I've run around with a lot of people, strange people, different people. So, you know, if someone said my mother-in-law shot somebody, it's not going to surprise me. Because anybody is capable of anything.
After reading the transcript of Lenny's second interview, listening to his ex-wife's interview, and also speaking with her myself, I expected the BCSO to bring him in on an arrest warrant at that time. But instead, they asked him to take a polygraph, which took an additional 2 years to get done. After those two interviews, the BCSO conducted the search warrant of his house and a second vehicle, and, well, what they found? Beyond those bindings and cables prosecutor Drew Miller mentioned at the end of the previous episode, seemed not only enough to arrest him, but guarantee a conviction. As they began searching his house, Detective Danny Varner pulled Lenny's wife aside and spoke to her again. And she says this, quote, "One night recently, when the TV news showed one of the female murder victims, he lowered his head and got sick. A detail I want you to remember moving ahead." All of that you just heard focused on Lenny's second wife. His first wife was no longer able to speak to law enforcement about him.
His first wife, I mean, he probably destroyed her life, honestly. She got with him early in college, and he just basically abused her emotionally, probably physically, and then even more so after his accident. And she did kill herself shortly after BCSO detectives spoke with her. I think probably she was at a breaking point. She'd already tried committing suicide before that, but I think it was in her home in a bathtub setting. I spoke to her daughter too, and I think she said something along the lines of, you know, that last interview was probably too rough. I mean, it's just, she's having to relive probably some of the worst times of her life.
That's journalist Brandon Howard. I asked him what he thought about Lenny's second interview.
He has some bizarre outbursts, specifically when they're talking about the truck and a truck tag, and he kind of just breaks out that he doesn't know anything about Dana's homicide or her murder, and they're like, whoa, 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 we're not saying you did, man.
And the one thing you said to me was the one thing that has always bugged you is, how would he know about this spot?
I was referring to Oscar Talley Road, where Shauna Garber's body was dumped. If Lenny was involved, there would have to be a link beyond him traveling through the area. It's clear, and investigators believe, that Shauna's murderer had a direct tie to the place where she was found.
When they went to his home, they found several bindings that appeared to match.
Brandon had spent years investigating Lenny. Like me, he couldn't understand why the BCSO had not arrested Lenny after his second interview and the subsequent searches.
So they get a search warrant for his house and his vehicles. And just talk to me a little bit about some of the forensic evidence that they find.
Yeah, the forensic stuff, they found several hairs in a vehicle he owned that he sold to a neighbor, along with evidence of blood cleanup throughout the vehicle. The hairs and blood were found pretty much all over the steering wheel, rearview mirror, floorboards, cargo area, outside doors. I think what complicated that was that the previous owner had a similar makeup to Dana in terms of complexion and maybe hair. He also cut himself when he tried to open the door because the door was locked when sold it to him. However, I still think that it's worth pursuing what happened to those hairs because they had what the crime lab stated was microscopic similarities to Dana's hair, which is more than anything they had of any other hair sample from any other suspect or suspect's vehicle. To add to that, the blood found in the station wagon's floorboard on the passenger side seemingly is a pool of blood. It's a jarring photo. DCSO took a photo of the station wagon, and the blood seemingly in the picture is jarring. It seems like there's a pool of it in the front seat, and they told me there's no way he can account for that much blood based off cutting his hand.
And so what are your thoughts on this guy being responsible for Dana and or Shauna Garber?
I think he did not get fully vetted in either case. There's other things that stand out when they searched his home involving interviews with family saying that he had a penchant for bondage and sexual relations. And there was a videotape with seemingly rape and bondage on the tape. It's not clear if it was pornographic or if it was a personal tape or who was on the tape or why he had it. There was no follow-up interview. And after the houses were searched, as far as I know, his interview specifically regarding the Sidham case is all over the place, seemingly admitting that he pulls over women from the grocery store where she worked, that he doesn't know Dana, that he does know Dana, that he could have pulled her over for having a low tire, that she did have a low tire.
It was getting harder to connect Dana and Shauna to Lenny or one specific suspect. I was feeling confident the two cases were the work of two different killers. I asked Detective Rhonda Wise from the McDonald County Sheriff's Office what she thought.
I think the biggest thing from a law enforcement standpoint, you know, is that we work these things, and both of these cases, I would be safe to say, will continue to be worked on until there is a solution. But I think the biggest thing is just to be able to find the answers and to bring closure for that family.
Here's Detective Lori Howard.
People say they have to be connected. They may be connected. But I think people also, and this is the scariest thing in the world to say, they underestimate how many bad guys there are. You have to keep an open mind. I say they're not connected. Show me evidence. I'll change my mind. But that's the goal. But we're always open. I think that's the beauty of this particular agency in particular, is we're always open to take a different mindset on something.
And McDonald County Sheriff Rob Evenson.
When a person does something like this, they're gonna answer for it, if not in this life, in the next. But whoever did this to Shauna owes a debt to the state of Missouri.
Yep.
And when I tell you I don't believe they're connected, that doesn't mean that my mind couldn't be changed. We serve our community, so you have to make a judgment call on how do you best serve your community. Do you put hours and hours into something that's old and cold, or do you work these more recent cases that are solvable so you can take care of people here and now in the moment? We do good to solve the ones that we're working with today.
After having some trouble pinning Jack Lenny down at his home during the early summer of 2023, I started trying to get hold of him on the phone. I made an early decision that I wasn't going to take his smarmy, sarcastic bullshit on the chin. He needed to be called out on all of the evidence pointing directly at him. He had obviously not been charged in either Dana or Shauna's case. For months, I got nothing but wrong numbers, dial tone, and silence. Then, one morning in early December 2023, I dialed a new number. And there he was.
Hello.
Looking for
You got him. What do you want?
It was the beginning of what would turn out to be an eye-popping, bizarre, revealing 45-minute call, resulting in me, right afterward, contacting a detective working one of the cases.
My name is M. William Phelps. I'm an investigative journalist recording this call for my podcast. I'd like to ask you some questions.
Now what?
I said my name is M. William Phelps. I'm an investigative journalist working on two cold cases. I'm recording this for my podcast, Paper Ghosts. I'd like to talk to you about some things.
What do you want?
Well, I'd like to talk to you about the murder of Dana Stidham.
With what?
Dana Stidham's murder.
I don't know. I have no earthly idea. I thought that was all done.
He knew exactly what I was referring to. That's not true.
It has been so long ago, I don't even think about it.
But you were there on the day she went missing at the Phillips Grocery. Could you talk to me about July 25th, 1989? Did you kill Dana Stidham? And there's a lot of people, including me, who think you did. If you want to take a deeper dive into some of the subjects covered in this episode and get real-time updates on the cases I cover in Paper Ghosts, subscribe to my ongoing weekly show, Crossing the Line with M. William Phelps, wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Next time on Paper Ghosts.
And everybody that has ever known him, and I'm going to be one of those people, he was evil. He was pure evil.
And so one of the things that's important is there could be someone listening who knows something. Oftentimes in cases like this, it can be small things that make the difference. It can be a small key that unlocks a door to an avenue that no one knew was there.
He also told me that the same person who killed Dana killed my girl. He referred to Shauna as my girl. Then he just reminds me again that he is a killer, and he never once told me that he wasn't a killer.
One note about sourcing. The call you heard at the top of this episode was a word-for-word reenactment taken directly from a transcript of the actual call. Paper Ghost Season 4 is written and executive produced by me, M. William Phelps. Script consulting by Rose Bocci. Sound design by Matt Russell. Executive production by Catherine Law. And audio editing and mixing by Brandon Dicker. Takaboom Productions. The series theme, number 442, is written and performed by Thomas Phelps and Tom Moon.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.